Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for, I guess, Thursday, October 6th, 2011. I don't know if I want to call it the Friday, October 7th, 2011
show. Was there a question at the end of your teleprompter?
But, yeah, I'm Ron Burgundy.
He will read anything.
Yeah, I'm not actually Ron Burgundy. I'm Greg Luca, and I am joined today by two writers who are here on a Thursday, like I said, because on Friday we will be raising hell in New Orleans. We have Tyler Jett.
Hey, how y'all doing? I noticed you're wearing a Miami Dolphins shirt today, Greg. I haven't really been following the NFL. How are they doing?
It's not that great. But they
have a pretty good young quarterback. So is he looking good? He's going to be awesome, right?
Chattany's out for the year as of today. Thanks for rubbing that one in. That's always nice to know. And before I start crying, we'd like to introduce Cody Jones.
Good to be back. It's been, what has it been, 3 weeks?
It's been a while,
Cody. It's been too long.
Cody
dealt with sickness, and then there was one we just didn't do, but we finally got Cody back on, so we're glad to have him.
And the chemistry is just as good as ever.
Sickness and Kentucky.
Yeah.
They're very similar, actually.
On today's show, we're going to kind of break down the LSU matchup. We got a lot of stuff to talk about with the quarterbacks, obviously, with who's going to start in place of John Brantley, who is going to be out for a few weeks. Nobody knows how long, and we don't really know exactly what's wrong. It's a lower leg injury, but he'll be out for a few weeks, so got to figure out who's going to start there and how they're going to do in a tough environment this weekend. Before we get into all the LSU stuff, I think Tyler has another t-shirt giveaway to announce. All
right. It's t-shirt giveaway time. This week's winner goes to longtime listener Franz Beard. he didn't really have a question. He more just had like a story to tell us. It was really good. Apparently, I don't know when this was because the dates seemed a little fuzzy and he wasn't really clear on it, but I guess he played running back for some high school team in Greensboro, North Carolina. I don't know, probably back in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s.
And maybe earlier, we're not sure.
He apparently, he was playing running back, and his offensive guard was Les Miles. He said Les Miles could pull like nobody's business. The best guard in the state, probably planet Earth at the time.
Wow.
The way he phrased it. That was his words, not mine. And apparently, Les Miles just opened up so many holes, and they ended up both making the All-American team. Unfortunately, Franz could not, according to him, he could not end up playing college football because academics were too important to him. So he just gave up a college scholarship just so he could focus on school. We're always going to be left to wonder what could have been, but you may not have an NFL championship ring or anything like that, but you are getting an Alligator Sports Podcast t-shirt. Congratulations,
which is equally valuable. I think
pretty much the same.
I would agree with that. When his E60 comes out, I think we'll feel a lot better about what could have been.
Goodness. And I got nothing on that. Before we get into the actual show, one last thing I want to touch on is last week we read an email from Vince Fanuel in the opening about potentially ending the show every week with It, Me, and Grind from Mike Gillisley. And I want to get your guys' reaction to that. Is this something we could actually do if I can find the sound file and isolate it and get it in here? I almost lost a whole podcast today, so
yeah,
that's a lot to ask out of me. But can we get the It, Me, and Grind at the end of the show? What do you think?
Can we or will we?
Should we? Should we is your question. Can we and will we is up to me, but should we is up to you all.
I like it. I'm a big fan of the It, Me, and Grind. I always think Mike Gillisley has a way with words. I would love to have him on the podcast 1 week. if we can do it, let's get some Mike Gillisley presence in here.
All right, maybe we just play a full like interview with Mike Gillisley every week.
Yeah, the Alligator Sports Podcast is a lot like the Florida Gators football team. Everybody just wants more Mike Gillisley.
Right, exactly. Last thing before we get into the actual football talk, which I mean, I'm guessing you guys came for, but us just talking about nothing is a lot of fun too. Send any emails and any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. We've been getting kind of an influx of those lately. It's nice to have a little feedback from you guys, have something to read on the show, so keep those coming. All right, we're coming to you a day earlier this week so you can get in our weekly preview before we all hit the road for LSU. That's where the Gators will be on Saturday when they play at LSU at 3:30 in Death Valley. And obviously the number one thing to talk about this game is the quarterback situation. Can we all agree Jeff Driskel's the starter, right? Does anybody see a chance there's a Jacoby Brissett starting this weekend?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think Driskel's injured. I honestly don't think he's going to be playing.
Really? Cody?
I don't know if I'm fully on board with that. I was going to say I was a little skeptical, and my skepticism was raised to an extremely high level after Charlie Weiss wouldn't answer a question.
Yeah, Charlie Weiss really clammed up on Tuesday when someone asked him about it. And the way he's phrased some things and the way Muschamp kind of phrased it on Monday really leads me to believe that there's something going on with Driskel more so than he will let on.
Okay, I guess I could believe that.
That's my Gator guarantee right now. Wow. Jeff Driskel's not starting quarterback on Saturday. Really?
So wait, did we see where he got injured in the game?
Yeah, it was the fourth quarter toward the end. It was like he decided to pull it down and run it, shocker, and got hit for like a 1 yard loss. And then the next play, he got sacked, and then he came over to the sidelines, and they ended up putting him on the trainer's table, taping up his ankle, whatever, doing all that business. And that's when I think it happened. Yeah, I don't think he went. That was the last drive.
That was the last offensive series, huh? I mean, it seems weird to me. It wouldn't be beyond Muschamp to not mention it in an injury report. And then it kind of came out in the middle of the press conference, just that, hey, he kind of had an ankle sprain. But do you really think they've all been splitting reps evenly in practice and he won't be able to go? Or do you think he hasn't been practicing
either? I think I think they haven't been splitting reps equally in practice because Jeff Driscoll has been hurt, hasn't really been able to practice.
Wow. I'm not that far in on this theory. I was definitely going to say I was a little skeptical, and I thought I would be, like, the furthest in on this.
No, I'm definitely the furthest. I'm putting all my chips in right now. The Jacoby Brissett's going to start on Saturday.
This is very shocking to me. So you think that when Muschamp kind of said Brissett's the backup and Murphy's definitely number three, he was basically announcing his starter and backup then?
In a way. Well, because he didn't ask. The question was, if Driscoll starts, how does the depth chart fall from there? And he said, well, if Driscoll starts, then Brissett will be the backup and Tyler Murphy will be the number three.
I was actually pretty surprised he answered that question at all.
Yeah.
Like,
does
that strike anybody else as weird that he would, like, put that out there? I don't know. It just seems strange, to given how everything else has worked and how the Driscoll's injury was kind of secret-ish.
It made no sense at all, because even on that teleconference when he was on earlier, he said, we don't know who our quarterback is yet. We're not going to announce a quarterback. And then someone said, if Driscoll's a starter, and he was kind of like, well, here's the whole pecking order, basically.
Yeah, the idea that Muschamp was going to deal in hypotheticals for just that, I found pretty strange. Cody, what was your take on kind of what we've heard this week in regards to the quarterbacks?
I still think it's going to be Driscoll. A lot of the players were actually fairly natural in their responses about how Driscoll's looked yesterday during media interviews, and for them to be just kind of comfortable in answering that and not get all awkward like Charlie Weiss did. I mean,
the players are never natural in the way they answer anything.
That's a good,
so it was just
point.
They could be completely uncomfortable. Weiss is like the same as everything else.
Weiss's 10-second pause though just threw me for a complete loop, because I had Muschamp either sold it great that Driscoll isn't playing or something like that on Monday, but when Weiss was talking, all he was asked was, I believe it was something about his ankle sprain, and he just said, like, how has he looked?
Yeah, it was basically how's the ankle sprain affected him.
Yeah, and I mean, that's so easy, I feel like, as a coach to lie about and just go, oh, he's looked great, you know, he looks fine, it's not even affecting him. But the fact that he paused and, like, was completely stumped, like, he had no response for 10 seconds. It was really kind of awkward. So I think that was kind of the thing that threw me for a little loop. I still think Driscoll's going to play, but I don't know. I'm not 100% sold on that at all.
Right, so
obviously I'm not.
Right. I guess do we think like Muschamp went to Weiss and was like, just don't talk about the injury situation at all, no matter what people say, just don't mention it? Or was this kind of Weiss like, maybe I just shouldn't?
I think that's kind of the rule going the whole time, is Muschamp doesn't want anyone talking about injuries except for himself. So I think Weiss is kind of following protocol on that. I also think that if my theory is correct, that Driscoll's actually been much more injured than people are letting on, then I think it was pretty obvious. I don't think Muschamp had to go to Weiss and tell him, don't say anything. I think it was pretty obvious, like, hey, don't be letting the world know that Driscoll's not playing.
Okay, so, well, I guess we have to kind of divide this up now, because Cody and I have to talk about what we expect from Driscoll, and you have to talk about what you expect from Brissett.
Okay, well, y'all can talk, and I'll just go peace out for a while.
Well, we'll start with your end of it. A little background on Brissett. He was the number three quarterback recruit last year, according to Rivals rankings. Wasn't really looked at by UF. I know Meyer offered him a gray shirt until Weiss and Muschamp came in, and then Weiss recruited him really hard, and he signed even though Driscoll was already here. We hadn't heard a lot about him until this week, and then obviously yesterday he became kind of a big point of conversation, and everything we heard was that Frankie Hammond said he has the strongest arm on the team. There was always all this stuff that we're usually going to get about how great he is in practice, and he's making great decisions, and he shows poise, and all that. But I mean, he wasn't here until the summer. He had a hard time. I don't know how he had a hard time, but he was definitely at a disadvantage when it comes to learning the playbook and learning the offense and adjusting to the college game. So Tyler, if he plays Saturday, what are you expecting from him? What constitutes a good game from Jacoby Brissett?
What constitutes a good game, or what am I expecting from him?
Both.
Okay, well, I guess what would constitute a good game is if he could throw for like 150 yards and not turn the ball over. That'd be
pretty outstanding.
That's how high the bar is, which is very low. I think, what do I expect from him? I think that offensively you'll see a very vanilla offense. It's going to be very simple. You're not going to see too much. They're not going to put too much on him. They're going to try to let him be a game manager. And I think that's kind of what you would do. I mean, he hasn't played in any games this year. He's only been around the offense for about a month and a half, 2 months now. So that's kind of, I mean, that's what I would think.
All right. Do you think he throws for like 100 yards if he plays? Is that even?
Oh, I don't. Like 100 yards isn't that much. I can see you sneak by and get 100 yards. You get 70 yards on a screen pass, theoretically. I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not saying give me an exact number, but if you had to guesstimate what he would do this weekend, where would you put it at?
Based on the zero snaps I've seen him take.
Well,
I'm not going to do it. No. Okay. I'm not going to guesstimate.
That's fine then. Okay. We'll move on to Driscoll. We've talked a lot about Driscoll so far this year just because he's the big name coming in. He's apparently the quarterback of the future. He was the number one quarterback recruit. He was a Meyer guy. He stayed over through the coaching change. And so far this season, he's played sparingly in four games. He had to come in, obviously, when Brantley got injured against Alabama. For this season, he's only 7 of 16 with two interceptions, only 73 yards, no touchdowns. Has run the ball pretty well, but nothing too outstanding, aside from that one carry against Alabama that was really their entire rushing offense on the day. So, Cody, if Driscoll plays, what do you expect to see from him?
I think a little bit of the same. I think a good game would be about 150 yards and don't turn the ball over, just like Tyler said for Brissett. I think that's the big thing is turnovers for him. Really, this whole game, whether or not Florida can stay in it, I think is going to be – we should know pretty early. It should be defined in the first quarter whether or not they can get that run game going. Because if they can't, if it's a lot like Alabama, I think it's going to be a long game for Florida again, just because you can't expect a freshman quarterback to go out there and lead you to victory at LSU against one of the best defenses in America. So it's going to be tough for him, no doubt about it. But he's got all the physical tools you want. I think Brissett's kind of the guy that was talked about in high school as a really good leader, a guy that played on a really successful high school team at Dwyer, and he's won a lot of games in high school, whereas Driscoll is kind of the guy that had all the physical tools that really his team wasn't very good in high school, and part of that is because I believe it was only a four-year program. I think his senior year was the fourth year the school had a football program, so he didn't really fault him too much for that, mm-hmm. but it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that because he does have all the tools you want, but can he maintain his poise in a situation like that?
Yeah, well, whether it's Driscoll or Brissett, and I think it'll be Driscoll, I agree on the 150 number would be great. And if they can somehow manage to avoid turnovers against LSU, they've forced a lot of turnovers this year. They're in the top 10 nationally, I think I saw something like they've had 12 or 14 turnovers they've forced already in five games this season. So if the quarterbacks can somehow keep that down, that would be impressive to me. But when you look at the situation, these freshman quarterbacks have never started a game before, these two guys. They're going into Death Valley against maybe the most talented defense out there. They rank number 3 nationally against the run and number 9 overall, but they've played a really tough schedule. So if they played the kind of softies Florida played, maybe they'd be number 1 in both of those. We don't know. But to put a freshman in that kind of situation, can you guys think of a worse scenario for a freshman to make his first start in? The only worst scenario is to come in
at halftime against Alabama. That's the only thing I can think of.
You think that's even worse? Like this?
Yeah.
I mean, you get to do that at home.
Yeah, but you don't have zero time to prepare.
Yeah, the game plan, and Weiss even said that, was built completely around Brantley and showcasing his arm a little bit. So I think that is true, you know, throwing him in there and then expecting him to throw it all around, it just obviously didn't work at all.
Well, one thing that they talked about, and you just touched on this a little bit, is that Weiss said they're probably going to tone down the game plan significantly. There's going to be less plays that they run for these quarterbacks, just so they don't have as much to learn and as much to try to keep track of. But how much do you really think that that's going to, you know, kind of come to fruition, really? Like, is it going to be as compact of a package as we would think, like, based on what they said, or is it going to kind of resemble what we've seen so far? Can we notice this difference?
I think it'll be simple. I think they're not going to ask him. Like, they asked Brantley to throw the ball all around against Alabama, which really surprised me, actually. I didn't think he had the capability to do it. They're certainly not going to have Driscoll or Brissett be throwing deep balls, be throwing a lot of big crossing route passes like he was doing. They're going to try to run the ball, and if not, then they're going to be screwed.
But I still don't think it'll be that noticeable of a change. I think it's something that would be similar to maybe what we saw at Kentucky or something like that, this offense, where it's predicated on the run and they have to get that going, but it still has some down-the-field elements just because you have to against LSU, or they'll load the box and those outside runs will be non-existent because of how fast that defense is. So they've got to stretch it out a little bit and throw at some point. But if there's one guy that I think it knows how to draw something up like that for an inexperienced quarterback, it's got to be Weiss.
I think it could be similar to what we saw in Kentucky, what we saw the first couple of games of the year, but it won't be like the first half of Alabama, which was clearly different. Like, when you play these good teams, when you play Alabama, when you play LSU, you play a different style. Now they have to go back to playing a more simple version. Like, they were playing a very simple offense early on in the year, but they're also playing pretty terrible defenses. Now they're going to have to play that simple offense against a pretty awesome defense, and it's going to be very challenging.
Right. I think they're going to want to run the ball and throw a lot of the check down and screen passes that we saw in the first couple of games just to get the ball to Rainey and Demps and try to let them do something. But that didn't work against Alabama, and I know they didn't try to do it in the first half against Alabama, but I feel like in the second half, they definitely tried to establish the run. In the first half, they tried to establish the run. Neither of those worked out, and the only passing lanes that were even open were seemingly more down the field. So if you're going to struggle against the Alabama defense, the LSU defense is even faster and even more physical, and I don't see that really working out for them. I mean, do you think that it's possible for them to establish the run game and thrive without going downfield to be successful?
No. I don't know, that's a simple answer, but their defensive line is so fast, and their linebackers are basically safeties that have bulked up since they got to LSU and moved down a little bit. They're going to be able to get to the edge, and with the way Florida blocked the line of scrimmage, if they don't improve that really drastically, I think they're going to have trouble with the run game yet again.
Yeah, I think this could be a bloodbath on Saturday because like they have to run the ball, and they can't run the ball because LSU knows that they have to run the ball. And Florida didn't do so hot against a very good run defense last week, and I think this is a better run defense this week.
Right, definitely, and I think it's a better matchup for Florida, this run defense, just because they have like more speed than Alabama, and if you would think there's a way Rainey and Demps could have an advantage, it would be speed. One thing a couple emailers sent in this week was we had Marshall Spivak and Paul Futch hit us back again this week. They want to know if we could see more Mike Gillisley this week. Is there any chance of that, just because... You know, I mean, LSU's defense is kind of a speed defense, and if Florida has a power runner, it's a Gillisley. I feel like all the time we get asked about Gillisley, and that's just something that's kind of the buzz around the team is there going to be more Gillisley or not? But, I mean, what do you guys see this week?
For some reason, I don't know why, everyone thinks Gillisley's like a 230-pound runner.
Right,
people
yeah.
think he's Trent Richardson. Gillisley's 200 pounds. He's not that big. He runs the ball a little bit more powerful than Demps and Rainey. But he's not like a power running back. He's not a guy you say, all right, we're going to give you the ball 30, 35 times like Marcus Lattimore or Trent Richardson, and we're going to let you kind of dictate the way our offense plays. That's, I think, not going to happen. Also, I think he has trouble holding on to the ball. He has fumbled the ball a couple of times. So I don't see why they would go with him instead of Demps and Rainey.
I think if they go anywhere with that, it's probably going to be maybe some more of Burton and Joyner, or Joyer, excuse me. I don't know why they really went away from that, to be honest with you. It kind of worked in the red zone a little bit, and they brought it back a little bit outside of that, but for some reason it's just disappeared, and when you've got to have that inside run presence, I think those two would make a lot of sense this weekend.
Yeah. Do you think the running back would have even mattered in the Alabama game? Like,
oh, no.
Who was taking carries?
It
wouldn't matter. There was some sports writer sitting next to me during the game who has never been there to any game in the past. And he basically was like, they got to get those little guys out of there. They can't do anything. It was like, well, as soon as you get the ball, he's getting hit. Like, it doesn't matter who you have. When your offensive line's getting dominated that way, you're not going to run the ball effectively.
Yeah, I was sitting next to Tom, and one thing he said was that he wanted to see more Gillisley against Alabama, too. And the way I was looking at it was Chris Rainey and Jeff Demps aren't going to run any of these guys over, but Mike Gillisley's not running any of these guys over either. So, like, what's the point?
I don't know if anybody is. That's the thing. Those Alabama linebackers are all huge. It's not like I don't think anyone's running through them or anything.
Emmitt Smith's not walking through that door.
That's true.
We did briefly touch on Burton. Do you guys think he's been good as a running back this year? Is he the kind of guy that can run people over? Is he going to be, like, a difference maker this weekend? Because
no,
I haven't seen
I think
that.
He's a mediocre runner. I think that people still have that hype left over from the Kentucky game last year. Like, he hasn't done anything against a good opponent ever, so I don't see him being a power runner.
Right. I really would like to see him get Joyer involved a little bit more. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to be your Trent Richardson and take 30 carries a game, but I think he could take maybe 10 or something like that and at least give them somewhat of a power threat through the middle to where make defenses respect that when he's lined up as a fullback, and maybe you suck some more defenders to the middle of the field and open up the outside a little bit for those quicker guys.
Right. Another thing that the emailers touched on, these two were very much on the same page this week. They want to know where Omarius Hines is. He's got one catch and one carry this year, and I thought he was effective last year. I thought he looked good on that one catch and that one carry this year. Do we have any guesses why Omarius Hines isn't out there? Do you guys know something I don't about this? Because I honestly don't know.
I don't know where he is. I don't know. Is he going to the games?
Did you play Saturday?
Were you there?
I always just assume in situations like this that maybe he's like struggling to pick up the playbook or something like that, because he was on the field a lot and did a lot of things last year for this team. And it just really, especially with the lack of effective receivers they've had so far, I just can't imagine another reason why he hasn't been on the field.
Yeah, I mean, very possible that he's having issues with the playbook, because from a talent standpoint, I don't see why he wouldn't be out there. Especially because we saw last week that they're kind of experimenting with the receivers a little bit, I feel like. Like, we started with Dunbar and Thompson, and now I feel like it's shifted over more to Hammond and DeBose, and maybe that was just one game, but I feel like I'm seeing more of those two, and less.
You're seeing Hammond, DeBose, and Thompson, though. How many catches did Thompson? I mean, Deontay had as many catches as anybody on Saturday.
I don't know about Saturday, but for this season, we still have Rainey and Demps are the leading receivers. Then Thompson with 9, Reed with 9, DeBose with 7, and Hammond with 6, and Dunbar with 5. So, I mean, they're all right around the nothing range, so it's hard to really differentiate between those guys. But
it's a lot of nothing.
Right. Of those four, who do you think are the two best? Who do you think we'll see the most this weekend? Any guesses on that?
I don't know about who's going to play the most, but based on what we've seen, I got to say I think DeBose and Hammond are the two best receivers they have.
I agree. I think they're a good complement for each other, too. DeBose is kind of the speed guy, and Hammond is just kind of the savvy route runner who really kind of knows to be in the right spot. I think those are probably the two guys at this point. But they still love Thompson, though. I mean, he's been a guy who's it seems like every coaching staff loves him, whatever. He always gets on the field, but he just hasn't done much.
Yeah. He brings leadership to the field.
I don't know if he has, like,
a championship.
Deontay Thompson must have, like, outstanding hands in practice or something, where they, like, see him play there, and then they think it's going to carry over, and he doesn't in games.
I just don't think they have a good enough receiver to, like, supersede him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think anybody's that good. That's the thing. So, like, Thompson keeps starting because no one else has really stepped up and been great.
Yeah, I guess if DeBose can kind of continue what he did Saturday and come even close to the hype that he came in with, then maybe he could be a guy that we see a lot more of and a lot less of Thompson. But just talking real quick about LSU's defense, they have a lot of young, talented guys. It's not like when you turn on the NFL draft next year, you'll see a lot of these guys. But if you watch LSU next year, they'll all be back. There's a lot of freshmen and sophomores in the mix. The one guy that really stands out is Tyrann Mathieu. He's I've heard him described as Ed Reed playing cornerback because he's just always around the ball. Just so far this season, in 5 games, he's forced 4 fumbles, he's got an interception, he has 1.5 sacks, and he leads the team in tackles with 35. He's got 8 tackles on the next guy on that team from the cornerback position. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to watch LSU this season, but what are your impressions of him? And what, like, I mean, is he the best defensive player in college football right now?
I don't know. On the team, he's the best. That's all I can say. He's pretty great. And, I mean, that's big for LSU. Their whole team's predicated. Their whole game is predicated on getting turnovers, and nobody's getting it like he's getting. It's incredible the way he's stripping the ball, the way he's getting in passing lanes, and he's getting sacked, like you said. I don't know if there is a better defender.
And he's so small, too. That's what's so unique about it. Like, it's usually like a big, like, 6 foot, 6 foot one defensive back that's going to have that type of impact. But being as small as he is, He's got that knack that it seems like not a lot of guys have to be able to strip the ball. I believe I actually heard he already has the school record for forced fumbles. So, I mean, having that in this early in his sophomore year is pretty remarkable.
It's like putting Greg out at cornerback.
I don't know if I would put up Tyrann Mathieu numbers, but I could probably be better than, like, Moses Jenkins.
I think that's a guarantee.
Well,
switching over to the defensive side, I think the number one concern for Florida is going to be stopping the run. Last week they gave up 226 yards on the ground against Alabama. Now they're facing another kind of power rushing attack in LSU. They have Spencer Ware, who has carried 81 times for 323 yards and 3 touchdowns. They also have Michael Ford, who's carried 61 times for 322 yards and 6 touchdowns. So what does Florida have to do differently to be able to stop the run more effectively against LSU, and what do you expect this weekend on that front?
Well, Dan Quinn said on Wednesday, basically when asked that question, that they just had to be more physical. They had to hit blocks more instead of getting blocked, which seems like something that can't be corrected. He says it can be corrected. He says that you can have a better attitude and you can go in there and be more physical. But the reason that they were getting, you know, as he put it, out physical is because their linebackers are smaller than the guys that are blocking them.
Yeah, the linebackers got destroyed against Alabama. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They were basically non-existent. I think Bostic made like 2 or 3 tackles in that game. And
one good punch.
Yeah, that's true.
Not a great punch.
Not a great punch.
Didn't exactly
connect, a punch. He made a punch.
One attempted punch, that's fair.
And 3 attempted tackles, so it works out well for him. It was a struggle, no doubt. Those linebackers really struggled a lot.
And Jelani's a guy who, it was the talk last season, kind of coming into the year, is that he's just kind of an undersized guy compared to a lot of other linebackers, especially other linebackers if they're going to play a 3-4. He's very much undersized and that kind of thing. I mean, can these guys make it work with that personnel, or is this just something that's going to be a problem because of who they have on the field?
I think it's going to be a problem until they recruit better. I mean, and I don't mean better, but I just mean different type of guys, just like bigger linebackers and some bigger defensive ends that they can maybe play as a stand-up linebacker a little bit.
Yeah, when they face a good power rushing attack like they did against Alabama, they're just in trouble. Like, there's not much they can do about that.
Yeah,
from a coaching standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. But going back to kind of the stuff Dan Quinn talked on, he was talking about with the defensive line, I think one of the things he talked about was like getting inside hand placement so that you can control your blocker and then make a play off that. And I guess apparently they were off to one side or something, or getting pushed around.
They were getting basically. Well, you basically said it's a leverage game. It's about who will win it, who wants it. It's a game of like who wants it more. And Alabama wanted it more, but it's a lot easier to quote unquote want it more when you're a lot bigger or you're simply better.
Right.
Florida clearly wanted it more against FAU. They wanted it more against UAB and Tennessee and Kentucky. I think they kind of sort of maybe wanted it against Alabama, but all of a sudden they just weren't able to want it more.
I'm glad you said that. That's one of my biggest things that annoys me the most about when a team loses, all of a sudden they just somehow didn't want it. Like, no, you got destroyed because the other team's better. That's why you lost the game.
They just weren't up for that Alabama game.
Yeah,
the nameless faceless opponent. They just didn't care about that.
They were
game.
Expecting the same kind of competition they got against FAU because they didn't know who they were playing, and then they were taken completely by surprise when Alabama didn't suck.
When do we bring in the NFL teams?
But yeah, another thing I wanted to talk about with the defense, front seven run stopping guys, were I did not see much out of either Ronald Powell or Sharif Floyd last weekend in terms of stopping the run, rushing the pass, or anything. I didn't really notice a whole lot out of those two guys. And this was something we talked about on Monday, but I'd like to get your guys' take on them because I think a lot was expected of those two players this coming into this year.
I think we talked about this not on the podcast, but I didn't know if Ronald Powell was in the game a lot of times. Like, I'd look at pre-snap, I'd look at where everyone was lined up, and I'd see him, obviously. But then once the snap started, he just disappeared. You didn't see anything from him at all. He's kind of, I guess he's just undersized to play linebacker. And when you face a power team that's just going to punch you in the mouth, they're going to go right at you, he's in trouble. I remember, I don't want to bring up my old high school glory days.
Oh, no, we would love to hear
okay,
that.
Okay, well, I remember we did face one team that had, an incredibly speedy outside linebacker. But he wasn't real big, but he was really speedy. I think he was, an all-district kind of guy. I think he ultimately played at Miami. But our strategy wasn't, let's run away from him. Our strategy was look at him and just go right at him because if you run away from him, that's the one thing he wants you to do because he can chase you down from the back. He can use that speed. But when you go right at him, he's a little bit undersized. That's really playing to his weaknesses, and that's kind of what goes on with Ronald Powell. He could probably chase down the fastest running backs in the nation, but when you just slam it straight forward, he's negated.
I agree with that. I think that's good, and that's why maybe they need to start moving him down to defensive end a little bit. But as far as Sharif Floyd goes, I don't claim to know more than Muschamp and Dan Quinn, but I'm starting to get a little bit curious as to if he's playing defensive end because it's best for him or because it's best for the team. Because they clearly don't have – I don't even know if they have much talent at defensive end. They're pretty thin at that position, and especially when it comes to guys who are actually could get to the quarterback. So I just kind of wonder if that is his best position at all or if he's just a defensive tackle, but they already have Easley and Howard and Hunter in there, so they figured he's the best fit to slide outside, which – from my untrained eye, I don't even know if he is. I feel like Easley might even be a little bit better on the outside because he's lighter and he's got that better first step.
Yeah. You should go four defensive tackles, put Omar Hunter outside.
I like that.
I mean, you'd have your four best players out there. But, yeah, this was something I wondered about with Floyd. It was something I kind of asked about one day after one of the games was just kind of where he thinks he's the best fit. And he said that, obviously he said the stuff where, I'll play wherever they put me and all that. But eventually he said that he feels most comfortable and thinks he's the most effective at end. But I just don't see it. And Dan Quinn was asked this week if he plans to slide Sharif Floyd and slide side more. And, I mean, he said no, not at this point. They're kind of happy with where he is. But definitely would expect to see more of Sharif Floyd. All right, another thing with LSU's offense. Quarterback Jarrett Lee's had a pretty solid season. Right, he's put up 64 of 108 for 7 touchdowns and 1 interception, 793 yards. Kind of been asked to be kind of a game manager, and you see with only the 1 interception that he's done a good job of taking care of the ball. What do you guys think is – well, actually, before we get into kind of Jarrett Lee specific stuff, Jordan Jefferson's also coming back. Have you guys heard anything about kind of how the balance of the quarterback position is supposed to be at LSU, who's going to get the majority of the snaps? What are we supposed to expect on that front? I'm sure they haven't exactly told everybody their game plan, but
– LSU's keeping that pretty close to the vest. Can you look up what Jefferson did last week in his first game back? I honestly don't know. What do you think, Cody?
I don't think he threw the ball last week. It was just a couple runs.
Yeah,
and
he's not showing up on the season throwing stats, so I'm assuming that's right.
And to be honest with you, I think that was kind of by design. I think him coming back for Kentucky made a lot of sense because you at least throw him out there. You put him in Florida's head a little bit. They see him running. So now the whole Florida defense is keying on when Jefferson's in the game, he's going to run, maybe forgetting that he's thrown the ball for the past 3 years too. So I think that's kind of one of my predictions is I think they're actually going to throw with Jordan Jefferson a little bit when he's in the game, just knowing that the Florida defense isn't probably expecting that to happen right away.
You say when he's in the game, do you have a guess about how the snaps are going to be split? Like when you kind of envision this scenario where Jordan Jefferson's in there throwing it / running it, is there something you had in mind on that front? Because I know it's hard to guess.
I think it's 35%.
Yeah, I'd probably go 34, but It's
no, I'd say 37, my bad, 37%.
I mean, it's obviously nobody has any idea, but I think it might be a little bit more than maybe people were expecting. I think Lee's the kind of guy that's got him here and has done a really good job this season, but Jefferson's the guy that I think can take this offense to the next level if he plays like he did in their bowl game last year. And that's been the big question is, can he put it together? Now, here we are in his senior season. People still asking that question. But I think he gives this offense the most upside. He probably also gives it the most downside, too, just because of the questions that he brings. And with that defense, do you feel like it's worth the risk? But I kind of feel like it is in this game for them.
Yeah, I feel like Jerry Lee does a good job of just not screwing it up. Just don't crash the car. LSU's offense as a whole, ranking the SEC, is ninth in total offense. They're averaging 349 yards per game, but they're third in scoring. And that discrepancy is only because they're the best team at causing turnovers. They have the best turnover margin in the SEC. And when that's basically their whole blueprint right now is Jarrett Lee, just take care of the ball. We're going to be real safe with it offensively, and defensively we'll put you in position to score points. And that's basically what's happened, and that's what's worked for them. Going forward, does that work? I don't know if it does work when you play a team like Alabama or when you start playing some of these better teams. But for right now, that's worked fine. I mean, they've obviously played some good teams, and it's worked okay. I think they're going to face a better team when they face Alabama, and that's ultimately their goal, is to beat Alabama. And maybe Jordan Jefferson's the guy for that. I think against Florida, they could honestly get away with just having Jarrett Lee just kind of sit on the ball a little bit and just be careful with it, because I think they're going to cause turnovers this week.
Yeah, I think that would be probably the smartest way to do it, just in terms of winning one game. But I'm saying in the grand picture of this whole season, with their goal being a national championship, I think Jordan Jefferson gives them the highest potential ceiling for an offense. So that's why I think it benefits them to throw him in there and try to figure out what they have with him.
I think this kind of makes sense, because if they probably wanted to just do whatever gave them the best chance to win against Florida, which is like we're talking like 99% chance to win or 100% chance to win, but I think they would play Jarrett Lee the whole game if it was only about that game. But I do think they want to get Jordan Jefferson more adjusted and then maybe be able to use him down the road. So Florida could see a mix of both of those guys. All right, kind of wrapping up the game preview, do you guys have like let's do score predictions and maybe something that you think is going to be a key to the game or the biggest factor you're going to look for that determines who wins and who loses and by what margin? Tyler, are you ready to go? I see you thinking over there.
LSU 34, Florida 10. That'd be my guess. And the offense is not going to be able to move the ball very well. The key of the game is if Florida can run the football. If Florida can run the football, their freshman quarterback will have a much better day, whoever it is. If they can't throw the football in Death Valley, it's going to be, like I said earlier, a bloodbath. And I kind of think it's going to happen. They didn't do a good job against Alabama, and they're facing just as good of a run defense this week, if not better.
All right, and then, well, before we move over to Cody real quick, Tyler, one thing we talked about during the week a little bit was you said to me that if Florida does not turn the ball over, they'll be able to keep it close. Do you still think that?
Yeah, I think if Florida can – yeah, because I don't think LSU's offense has been that good. I think, honestly, like I said earlier, they're ninth overall in the SEC. Now, granted, I know that's against better teams than what most teams have faced in the SEC. I know they've had a much tougher schedule. I think they've had the toughest schedule in the nation. But I still don't think LSU's offense is that good. Whether it is Jarrett Lee a quarterback or Jordan Jefferson, because Jordan Jefferson right now is a little rusty. He's not necessarily ready. I think if Florida can just play a game where they're punting the ball a lot, I honestly think Florida's defense could keep up with LSU's offense. And I think if that was the case, it could be a tight game going down the stretch. I think the spread right now is at 14, the betting lines, if such a thing were legal. And I think that if such a thing was legal, and if I knew Florida wasn't going to turn the ball over at all and I wasn't covering the team, I might take Florida to keep it within 14. But
14-0 game kind of thing?
That could happen, yeah. I really think that Florida could keep this game semi-close, a two-score game, if they didn't turn the ball over at all. But I think they're going to because of the environment they're in, because of how inexperienced their quarterback is.
All right, it's fair. Cody, what do you got for us?
I'm going to go LSU 28-13. I think that 13 number might be a little bit high, but I feel like Jarrett Lee's due for at least one interception just because he's thrown so many in his career. I'm not buying into just this season yet. So I'll take 28-13. I think kind of a weird prediction. I feel like Florida's probably going to struggle to defend the run again. I think that LSU offensive line has had a lot of success, and I'm a big Spencer Ware fan. I think he's going to do a good job on Saturday as well. I think they present a lot of challenges to that defensive line. And again, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens if that does occur, because this Florida defense has got a lot of heat for letting Trent Richardson basically destroy them last week single-handedly. So if they do that again, you know, there will be a lot more heat on them for sure.
All right. I'm going to go with 27-6. I think LSU wins it. Like you guys kind of said, I don't like Florida's offense. I don't like their chances with I wouldn't like their chances with Brantley. I definitely don't like their chances with one of the freshmen. And just the struggles to run the ball, there's not a great reason why those shouldn't continue. LSU's defense is just as good. It's a tough environment. And LSU, I don't have them scoring a ton of points. I said 27 because I don't think they're going to need to. And maybe Florida's going to do everything they can to keep it on the ground and avoid turnovers. So 27-6 is what I'm going with. Okay, before we move into the Gator guarantees, I want to address an email we got this week real quick. We have one from Josh Rose. It says, guys, can you break down your thoughts overall of Muschamp's first year so far? What are your impressions of him and Weiss up to this point? From what we've seen so far, what kind of expectations should we have of this regime moving forward in the next few years? Do you see us being the dominant force in the East again? Does the Alabama-Florida SEC championship rivalry get itself back on track? So a lot of stuff to digest there, but Tyler,
I'll just say yes to everything. It's going to happen. All of it.
Yeah, I think way too early to have a definitive answer on that. Muschamp and this staff is basically coaching one meaningful game, one tough game. I mean, maybe you could say Tennessee, but I'm not going to do that. But even Alabama, like, I don't even feel like you can really, like, blame that on the coaching staff. You know, Muschamp isn't a 210-pound linebacker trying to tackle Trent Richardson and having huge linemen throwing him around. So, I mean, I have trouble giving him a lot of blame, and I've been really impressed with what Weiss has done so far, but I don't think any of that is a surprise to anyone.
Yeah, some stupid sports writer tweeted during the game on Saturday in the first half, like toward the end of the first half, once after Alabama got that pick six, and then Alabama scored the next drive, it was 24-10. Like, as soon as it happened, the writer was on Twitter and just said, oh, Alabama's coaching staff is clearly out-coaching Florida's coaching staff.
Yeah, I don't.
It's like, how do you – it's not much coaching when you just say, hey, we're going to hand the ball off to Trevor Richardson left 15 times straight. Like, that's not like some sort of tactical thing. It's just simply, we're going to get the ball, we're going to pound it at you. And it's not like the pick six is the coach's fault. Like, clearly they shouldn't have called that play where John Bradley throws a pick six. Like, I don't know what they were thinking. That's the opposite of what they're looking to do. So I don't know what they're thinking. But, I don't think you can put much on them. You put much blame on them. But at the same time, they haven't really proven themselves yet, so it's still up in the air.
Yeah, I think one thing I want to credit Muschamp is I think his big focus has been the secondary. That's something where he's the most hands-on, and I think those guys have looked pretty good. So, I mean, I want to give Muschamp some credit for that, but I don't know for sure. And like Cody said, I think Weiss has definitely done a great job. I mean, the first few games, he found ways to get Rainey and Demps the ball in space in ways where they could make plays and defenses couldn't, you know, stop it. Because, like, Adazio was trying to do the same thing. He was trying to get Rainey and Demps the ball as often as possible. But it became so predictable the way that he did it that it didn't matter how good they were, that it was just easy to stop them. So I think from that standpoint, Weiss has definitely done a great job. And then we saw what he did against Alabama. To be able to have any offense where John Brantley can throw for, like, 190 yards against Alabama in the first half, I mean, that's kudos to Weiss, in my opinion. Another thing I want to talk about real quick, it kind of relates to Weiss, is I feel like, and maybe this is just overreaction to what I saw against Alabama, but I feel like a lot of times their offense is a lot more effective when they're in this kind of scripted zone that they talk about, when it's the first couple of drives, and then after that it starts to get a little choppy and we might see some miscommunications. Have you guys seen that? Do you agree with what I'm saying?
Actually, yeah, I totally agree with that. We kind of talked about that before the Alabama game. They've been great to start games. They're outscoring teams in the first quarter. They're doing a really good job. And it seems like in the second quarter, they're not so hot. And then I think they kind of pick it up a little bit after halftime. But, I definitely agree with you that they're at the beginning of the game is when they're at their best, when Weiss has everything scripted.
The Tennessee game, I think, is a perfect example of that. They marched all up and down the field those first couple drives. In the second quarter, they hit a little bit of a lull. Tennessee gets back in the game with a late touchdown the first half. And then all of a sudden, you're looking at halftime with a whole second half to play, and it's a pretty close game. So, yeah, I think you're right, though. The first couple drives have been very well executed. You can tell the players are comfortable with those plays. They've worked on them a lot in practice, but past that, it has been a little uncomfortable for them.
Right, you guys about summed it up, and I don't know if we want to give Weiss more credit for drawing up such an effective thing earlier or, like, dock him points for how they lose it after that, but either way, I think the production of the offense is enough to say Weiss has done a good job so far. Before we wrap up the email segment real quick, the one email segment that we have just read there, I want to say that we've got emails in the past that people are looking for a little more small sports coverage. And actually, Gators in the NFL, which I forgot to do on Monday, but we'll get back on track with that next Monday. But people are looking for those things, so we're going to put together a little bit of a segment, and hopefully we can start both of those next week. So don't give up on us just yet. We'll get you the small sports and the Gators in the NFL that you've been looking for. It's time for our Gator guarantees. Every week we're going to give you, before the game, something to look for, some bold prediction that we have that you can keep an eye on. Last week it was just Tyler and I Tyler, why don't you recap what your prediction was, how that went, and what went wrong for you? Because you know we never get these right. We can just take that off the bat. It's not going to be right.
Actually, we're not sure if I got mine right or wrong. My guarantee was that Muschamp would be so upset with the referees during the game and yell at the referees so much and his own players so much and his assistant coaches so much that he wouldn't have a voice by the end of the game based on how animated he had been for the big UAB win and the big Tennessee win, that when you get Alabama in town, he was really going to go insane. And I kind of have to say, I think I was right, because he really did go insane. After the game, I kind of thought he would lose his voice, like I said. And in the press conference, we don't know if he lost his voice or not, because he didn't really answer questions. People asked him stuff, and he'd sort of say something, but it wasn't really an answer. So I still give myself a point on that one, but you guys can say what you feel about that.
I mean, I think you deserve some credit. It was definitely the shortest, least informative, quietest press conference in Muschamp's career so far.
After his first loss, too. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah. Cody has not been with us to do Gator Guarantee since before Tennessee, but he happened to remember his guarantee, so we're going to let him recap it for us.
Yeah, I was pretty dead set in the fact that Dominic Easley would get into a squirmish, we'll call it, with the old Smokey, the Tennessee mascot. Really disappointed to say that did not happen. Had a lot of potential there.
That we know of. We don't know what
that's a good
after
point.
The game.
maybe the dog had some chicken wings in his hand or something and easily just
knocked him
upset
out
about
in the bag.
That. Yeah. Hypothetically, of course. But yeah, so that didn't work out.
Allegedly, he knocked the dog out afterwards.
Allegedly.
Yeah. We're going to allege that now and then give Cody credit retroactively. That's fair. All right, mine last week was that Gator wide receivers won't catch a pass against Alabama.
How'd that work out for you, Greg?
I lasted a kickoff return before mine went wrong. I got that in. That part was fun. And then DeBose had a 65-yard touchdown. So, no excuses. That was just terrible.
You lasted a kick return and a pre-snap penalty.
It's true.
Ooh, okay.
Was there a delay, an illegal shift or delay of game or something like that?
It was something like 15 seconds, which is longer than it would normally take to get to the first play. So, I mean, I guess it could have been worse.
Yeah.
All right.
Slightly.
Yeah. Looking ahead to LSU, Tyler, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I already guaranteed who I think is going to start at quarterback with Jacoby Brissett. But whoever starts at quarterback, I guarantee they turn the ball over at least twice.
Okay, that's fair. It doesn't seem like an outrageously high number for a first-time quarterback against that defense. Can we get you to go higher?
Yeah,
what do you want to do? How are you going to make me go higher?
I mean, like, would you say three? Can you guarantee three?
I guarantee two. Or more.
Wow. Can you guarantee three?
That's embarrassing.
Two is not that. That's not that
two,
bold.
Two or more. How is that not bold? Two's turnovers is a decent amount. Yeah,
John Brantley did that against FAU.
Jeff, just
three turnovers.
Okay.
That's what got me.
Good
John Brantley did that against FAU. All right, fine.
Good argument. All right, Cody, what do you have for us?
Mine's a little two-pronged one here that we may have to revisit in March or April. But I'm going to say that Spencer Ware, LSU's running back, rushes for 100 yards and hits a home run against the Gators in the spring, as he's also an outfielder on the LSU baseball team. So.
Yeah, did you guys know that the Gators play baseball, too?
Yeah.
Because based on the attendance, you don't.
It's not just football. Cody, if you guys are interested in any kind of Gator preseason, what is it, fall scrimmage? What
fall
do they even
scrimmages,
call it?
Yeah.
If you want your fall scrimmage news, Cody's your guy.
And we know you're interested, right?
Right. He's all over that. So when he shouts out his Twitter later, you got to make sure you follow. It's not the one he hates anymore, so you can
That's
actually,
true.
He might actually give it to you this time. Mine is that I'm going double or nothing with mine. I think I was so wrong last week that the only way to try to redeem myself is to ride it out. So I think, once again, a Gator wide receiver will not catch a pass.
We're going to
keep riding that train. I mean, listen, the fact that they can't figure out who it is going against Tyrann Mathieu and Morris Claiborne, two very good corners, I don't like their chances. I'll just say that.
Did Deontay Thompson and you have it running at some point?
No. I have nothing against these guys personally.
Is it Deontay? Who don't you like? Who's the person? Who's your enemy?
Listen, Frankie Hammond was in our editing class for one day, so I consider us to be very close friends.
Yeah, he was in there one day.
Quentin Dunbar is kind of the funnest guy on the team in terms of interviews.
We
voted him most likely to avert a hostage crisis, so I have nothing against him. And I mean, I don't really know Andre DeBose that well. Maybe he was.
He seems like a nice guy. He looks just like Jeremy Maclin.
That's a great point.
Yeah, that's points in his favor for sure, but.
This is how little Greg knows Andre DeBose, by the way. I said before one of the games, that Andre DeBose looks just like Jeremy Maclin. And he said, well, I need to see a picture. So I pulled up a picture of Jeremy Maclin. He goes, no, I know what Jeremy Maclin looks like. Give me a picture of Andre DeBose. The player on the team he's covering.
Andre DeBose isn't a very popular media selection, so how could I have known of Andre DeBose?
I don't know. But so I had to pull that up, and he goes, oh, yeah, he looks just like Jeremy Maclin.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't argue with you after I knew who he was. It just took me a while to get to that point. But, yeah, on that shameful note, I think we're about ready to wrap up the show. Send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. We've been getting a lot more of those lately. It's nice to have a little feedback, a little bit of different things that we talk about, so you know we're touching on things that are important to you. Another thing you can do is tweet us. You can follow us @AlligatorSports. We're always looking for questions for our mailbag. It's kind of a lot of the same stuff that you talk about, want to know for the podcast, can also be useful for that. If you think anything that you'd like to see us answer in print, we'll get your Twitter handle a shout-out in the paper, which is always fun.
Just think you do that Alligator Sports bump.
Yeah.
It'll be like two more followers, maybe. Probably one, but maybe two.
It's pretty serious. If you want to follow me, you can follow me @GregLuca, no spaces or anything. Tyler, what's yours?
Mine is @TylerJet. A couple more bells and whistles on there. There's Tyler and then 2 underscores Jet, not 1 underscore. 2 underscores.
Is that just going to be a thing that you do now? Are we not going to get that straightened out ever?
It's not going to happen because the Tyler 1 underscore Jet's now a private profile, and well, people aren't even allowed to tweet him. The original plan was just to flood his inbox to the point where he just gave up and gave me the handle, which I politely asked for. But that hasn't happened. But if you somehow get to see this guy's profile, the first sentence on his profile is in all caps: "This is not the Tyler Jet from UF. He uses 2 underscores." And after that, I like hanging out with my friends and going to the beach.
Yeah, well,
so that's two things I can tell you about him.
You ruined his Twitter life.
I can tell you that he's not me and that he likes hanging out at the beach with his friends.
The problem is that 2 underscore doesn't show up in print. So, I mean, you should get that straightened out.
Well, what do you want me to do? He's got the 1 underscore. And the regular Tyler Jets, that's too high of a
bar.
That's
the issue here. Go for the no underscore. I understand this.
I'm a little intimidated by that because someone who got the Tyler regular Jet, like that person had some foresight.
Wow.
Just start, like, throwing symbols around or, like, put like,
What do you mean throwing symbols around?
Like, you just throw, like, underscores at the beginning or, like, I don't know, can you do, like, asterisks? What kind of stuff does Twitter allow? You just gotta do something that's uniquely you.
I'll take suggestions. Listeners, if you want to email in about this and some suggestions of how I should change my Twitter handle, I will listen.
What if we flood the inbox of no underscore? See what happens.
Okay, we can do that, too. You want to do that?
We're going to attack this guy.
Everyone tweet @TylerJet whenever you tweet at me as well.
Everybody listening, tweet @TylerJet. Tell him to get off the handle, and then we'll never have to worry about this again.
Well, first, Tyler has to do it and ask. He might just be like, yeah, sure, whatever, and this is no issue.
Wait till next week.
We're going with the same strategy when we tried with a regular underscore guy, and maybe this time it'll work. We're not changing anything. We're just doing it again. We're like Steve Adazio.
Now that we've got through Tyler's epic Twitter saga, Cody, what's your handle?
Mine is C Jones Scout.
Okay. So not the FI Gators.
No, I ditch the migraine every week as I try to read my Twitter name out loud. It's we're going simple now.
So this all works out because Cody's on FightingGators.com, which is part of the Scout Network. Why don't you talk a little bit about that stuff, what you got going on over there?
Yeah, we cover football, basketball, and baseball, as well as recruiting. Recruiting's kind of the lifeblood of the site. We actually have a guy who does that full time to kind of give you a heads up on guys coming in next year and even the couple years after that. So they cover that quite a bit. They got the message board side of it as well, if that's what people are interested in. So got a little bit of everything.
Again. If you want to know about what the Florida Gators roster is going to look like in 2017, go to FightingGators.com. They've got the all middle school team up there, I think. The all 7th grade team.
That's true.
A lot of this recruiting stuff does get a little ridiculous. But one thing I will say about Cody and Fighting Gators is, I'm not afraid to admit this and hurt our readership a little bit. If you want your baseball news, Cody's the guy to go to. I don't want to talk anything bad about our baseball writers, but Cody's
definitely the guy. Well, we don't have baseball writers yet. They haven't been. Once we get baseball writers, you got to watch out.
Yeah, I mean,
for now, though, Cody's the guy.
They'll surely rival Cody, but, I mean, for now, he's the guy, definitely. All right, a couple last things. If you want to like us on Facebook, you go to facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. Like we said, feedback to podcast@alligator.org. Subscribe on iTunes. I trip up over these things every week. There's so many. I need to get like an established order I want to say all this stuff in. But I think I've hit it all. I don't know. Am I missing anything, guys? Anything else you want to say before we wrap up this show?
Friend me on Facebook, and I can flood your box with all sorts of good stuff.
Unless he's trying to take your Facebook name, too. Sure. That guy's going to be in trouble.
Look out. All right.
I think I could tag. There could be multiple people with the same name on Facebook.
All right. And we'll be back on Monday. It'll likely be me, Tom, and Tyler with an LSU recap. And then I assume we'll have this crew back in here the week after that, talk about some Auburn stuff. That's going to get a little dicey again with travel, but we'll figure something out and get a show out to you. And until then, thank you for listening.